potentially solving a cold case should never be a sad or depressing event.
This is the Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast with your host, Kurt Dillon.
This podcast is like nothing else out there. It's true crime, but we don't present that in a sad or morose kind of manner.
The Veritas 7 features the most interactive and immersive true crime podcasting experience ever imagined.
Our whole goal is engagement with our audience. That's before, during, and after we record each episode. The whole purpose of this show is to actually try and solve these crimes. And we use real police documents to do that.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, so you'll know right away when each new episode goes live.
This is the only true crime podcast I know of where the audience can actually help solve the crime. We are all about trying to solve these crimes. Our whole team is dedicated to uncovering the truth. That's where the name Veritas comes from.
Let's get into the action. Take it away, Kurt.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me, your host, Kurt Dillon, for this, another episode of the Veritas 7. Tonight, we are getting into the heartbreaking case of Natalie Holloway. One of the more popular ones that we've done. Our emphasis in this show, obviously, is going to be, for the most part, cases that haven't gotten all the national spotlight and notoriety. But this case is just so gut-wrenching when you especially consider that the prime suspect in her murder has been convicted in another country for brutally murdering another girl, and now has recently been extradited to the United States, not on murder charges or for anything to do with killing Natalie Holloway, but in fact for extorting her mother into sending him money in exchange for him telling her where she could find her daughter's remains. I mean, I'm doing this a long time. That's pretty ghastly. That's a pretty ghastly crime. So we're going to get into all of that in this case here tonight and in the episodes moving forward. Again, we always recommend that aside from these teaser episodes, you also go and look for the Gifted Insights episode that we have on this case. Particularly in this case, the Gifted Insights episode that we have is groundbreaking in that our resident psychic, Gina Nisanoff, actually received a message from Natalie for her mother. So you definitely want to hear that and you want to see that. That's only in our Gifted Insights episode. So you're going to want to go and look up the Gifted Insights episode that pertains to Natalie Holloway's case as well. We also have an uncensored episode that pertains to Natalie Holloway's case, which you're going to want to go and take a look at as well. We have this teaser episode, and very shortly, we are going to be doing the full tilt, what we call our prime episode on Natalie Holloway, which is, of course, 6 chapters ranging from victimology all the way to verdict. We look at the case from every aspect, every possible way, look at all the evidence, FOIA requests on everything, and then we present a case as if we were going to submit to a grand jury to get an indictment. So you don't want to miss that. It's actually your opportunity as our audience to participate in that and cast your vote on who you think might be responsible for the case. So you definitely want to keep your eyes out for those prime episodes when they launch. Until then, we do have plenty of content, as I mentioned in the Gifted Insights episode, as well as in the uncensored episode and this teaser. So stand by. You don't want to go anywhere. We have a lot to cover, a lot of information in this case, because Veritas means truth, and the truth starts now.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free. That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while. Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it. I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us again tonight. As I'm talking here, I have the photo of Natalie on the plane after she left Alabama and she was on her way to Aruba. I have a photo of her with her wearing a little spaghetti strap. It's a really beautiful picture of an 18-year-old girl that, you know, just looks like the world is her oyster and she could do anything she wants. And nobody could have known at that point that she would never go home again. What is it about this case that really hits home to you guys?
So what we have is we have this group of high schooler kids that are headed down to Aruba to go on a, not necessarily a school-oriented trip, but it was organized by, you know, the family members, and they had sponsors and whatnot, right? And
yeah,
they're going to Aruba. I forget how long they were there, like a week, right?
I think it was a week, yeah.
They stayed at a Holiday Inn. They were partying like rock stars, drinking and all over the place, changing rooms and kind of having a wild time. And this last night before they come back, she was at a bar. And I think around 1:30, some of her friends saw her leave with Johan, right? And
yes,
they were in a car that those two brothers owned the car. So the four of them were in that car and they leave the bar at 1:30, right?
Right. Yeah, it was a gray Honda and it was owned by Deepak and Satish Kalpol.
And I guess their official story was the three of them drove to the hotel, dropped her off, never saw her again, and they left. But once Natalie didn't get on the plane, everybody starts asking questions. And then the three of them stories just started changing all over the place. So, you know, something had to be up with these three people, right?
Absolutely. And obviously they went and they checked the security footage at the hotel and they realized pretty quick that she never came back to the hotel after she left that night. So they knew that they were lying at least about that. So they were caught in lies. All three of them were caught in lies, you know, really within minutes.
And for me, that, I mean, when you change your story so many times, it's essentially an admission of guilt.
It really is. And the, you know, the crazy thing about this case, as we progress, it's going to come out a little bit more clearly. But as we progress in this case, this kid is such a pathological liar. It's actually helped him stay out of prison. As we're going to see, each time they've tried to back him into a corner, he's given them a story and then he's changed the story and been like, well, you know, I lied about that. So the ironic thing is, when you do that and you impeach yourself, you really steal the prosecution's thunder.
Yeah. So his background, he was Dutch, right?
The Netherlands.
And they didn't he come from a family with some money?
A lot of money, yes. And actually, he was born and raised in Aruba. Aruba is actually a Dutch island. It's owned by the Netherlands. So it's Dutch by sovereignty.
Were his parents living on the island or he was there by himself?
Parents were living on the island too. As a matter of fact, at one point, later on, we'll get more into it, but in 2010, this is the reason why he was extradited to the United States now. In 2010, he attempted to extort Natalie's mother by telling her that for $250,000, $25,000 of that up front, he would tell her where she could find Natalie's remains. So they set up this whole operation, and this guy, Kelly, who was her mother's lawyer, John Q. Kelly is his name, he arranged to be the go-between. He flew down to Aruba and he brought Vandersloot $10,000 in cash. At the same time, Beth Holloway, which is Natalie's mom, wired Vandersloot another $15,000 to make up the $25,000 that he demanded that he wanted up front to tell them where Natalie's remains were. And of course, the lawyer, his job after he gave Vandersloot the money was to go to the site and verify that Natalie was actually there with the Aruban police. So as you can imagine, after he got the $25,000, Vandersloot took Kelly, John Kelly, the lawyer, to a house somewhere there in Aruba and told Kelly that his father, who is now dead at that point, 2010, he told Kelly that his father was constructing that house when Natalie died and, as a favor to him, entombed her body in the concrete foundation of the house. So that's the initial story that Vandersloot gave Kelly.
I knew the house hadn't been built yet, but I didn't know that they were actually doing foundation work at that time.
So later on, a couple of days later, Kelly emails Vandersloot and tells him that they investigated a little bit with the Aruban police and that the explanation that he gave Kelly was worthless. And that's a direct quote. Said that it was worthless information.
So the house, there was no work being done on the house at the time of the disappearance? Is that what Kelly was saying?
No, they used ground penetrating radar and said that side scan radar, and they verified that there were no human remains in the foundation.
Oh, okay.
Without bulldozing the house. What's his name thought that they were going to bulldoze the house to get to the foundation, and that was going to give him some time, and they didn't. You know, we have technology nowadays that can see right through that stuff. Concrete's pretty easy when it comes to x-rays. So they x-rayed this foundation of the house and found that there was no human remains. So Kelly and the police told Vandersloot that he was full of crap. And Vandersloot, laughing in the reply email, said, LOL, I know. And yeah, sorry, I lied about that too. And then 2 days later, he left and flew to Peru. So that was the end of that. Now, that was in June of 2010. Natalie disappeared in 2005. After the incident happened in June of that year, Vandersloot and those two brothers, who are Pakistani, they were all arrested in Aruba for suspicion of kidnapping and murder. They were kept in jail for 3 months, about 90 days. But then in September, the Aruban authorities let them go without any charges being filed. All three of them were released.
I remember hearing about that because the citizens were starting to get angry of the negative attention that was happening there. And they
it messed their tourism all up.
Yeah, and they turned against the mother, which she was very shocked and surprised because she felt like she had all this support with her daughter. And then it's like everyone just kind of turned against them and didn't want this being how they're seen. And they started protesting for her to leave, and they felt like they didn't have enough to keep holding him any longer.
But then the plot thickens. Now the story's going to get a little bit better.
I'm confused by the timeline because he got in trouble in Peru while he was down there.
We're still 5 years now. I doubled back. Natalie just disappeared and they don't know what's going on. There's all kinds of craziness. And Natalie's mother's going down there and looking for her, and she wants to talk to Vandersloot, but he's unavailable. She can't get to him. So all of that went on for about a year. Then in 2006, Vandersloot had to go to school. So he decided he was going to go to school in the Netherlands. And he was in college at this point. So he was actually in the Netherlands in February of 2006, and ABC News contacted him, offered him a ridiculous amount of money if he would come to the United States and do an interview live on TV. So this kid, with clearly larger genitalia than he has cranial material, flew to New York and sat down for this face-to-face on TV interview, live interview, with ABC News. While he was doing the interview, he said, by the way, so everybody knows, the photos and the video of that interview are going to be on our YouTube channel, and they're going to be on our website. So you'll be able to look at the photos, and you'll be able to actually watch the interview that Vandersloot had back in February of 2006 on ABC News. His exact quote during that interview was, "The last time I saw her, she was sitting on the sand by the ocean." So his story now had changed from him and the two Pakistani guys, from them dropping her off back at the Holiday Inn, to they were all on the beach and he had to go. So he left her there on the beach alone at 1:30 in the morning, staring out at the ocean.
Yeah, so he lied through his teeth, and every single interview, he changes his story.
Then, in November of 2007, now it's almost 2 years after that ABC News interview, in November of 2007, Vandersloot and the Calpo brothers were once again arrested in Aruba for suspicion of murder. New evidence had come up because the Aruban police had been shown a video of Vandersloot actually confessing to the crime and saying that he did it. But again, he's such a con artist and such a conniving weasel that he lied about so many of the details in the confession that when they went to go corroborate the details of the confession, none of the details turned out to be accurate. So they couldn't hold him and they couldn't use the confession because every part of it other than "I killed her" was made up. And of course, most of us know that in order to have a confession today, a confession alone is not going to get you convicted of a crime. The authorities and the prosecution have to be able to corroborate your confession with actual evidence, which is why a confession isn't just, "Yeah, I did it." You have to go into detail and you have to tell them how and why and what and where the body is and what the gun, where's the gun or the knife or the pipe or the wrench or the whatever it is. You have to tell them all those details, and they have to be able to corroborate those details. If they can't corroborate those details, whether you did it or not, your confession is worthless.
Wasn't his confession different even after that? Oh, gosh, yes. It changes many more times.
Like, he said he picked her up and she demanded that he put her down. And yes. I forget exactly what happened.
So now, and fast forward February of 2008, which is 4 months after they were arrested the last time. The Aruban officials reopened the case again after the tape was released publicly showing Vandersloot describing Holloway's death. And it was, this one was filmed by a hidden camera by the Dutch crime reporter. The guy's name is Peter de Vries. So he basically got Vandersloot to agree to an interview kind of off the record. He hid a camera and recorded Vandersloot without his knowledge, admitting to the crime and telling details of the crime. But this, once again,
where he was saying that she was shaking and slumped over and having a seizure.
In that video, I know, in that video, I'm not sure that's the one where that happens yet or not.
In 2008. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So then that is the one. Mm-hmm. So in that one, he says that she had some kind of seizure or whatever. That's right. Now, once again, they couldn't corroborate his statement and his confession because all of the other all the other circumstantial evidence that he talks about in there is all BS. So since they couldn't corroborate anything, once again, that nothing legally that they can use his confession for. Just saying I did it isn't good enough. Now, fast forward another 2 years to March of 2010. Now is where we start getting into the plot, where things are now, and the plot's going to deepen even more. In March of 2010, Vandersloot demands money. He says, this is where he says, I want $250,000 and I need $25,000 of it to be paid up front. And I need it from Holloway's mother, Beth. In exchange, he promises that he's going to tell everybody where Natalie's body is. So Beth, the brilliant mother that she is, really, I have to applaud this woman's tenacity. I'm not going to say most people, but a lot of people would have just crumbled into like a shell of their former self after being dragged like this. But not Beth. Beth Holloway is really a very, very strong woman. And after going through all of that in Aruba and everything else, here's this guy basically blackmailing or extorting her. If she wants her daughter's body back again, she's going to cough up $250,000. So Beth plays along and she contacts the authorities in Alabama and her attorney, and all of them together work up this sting operation. They're going to trap Vandersloot into getting him to, without any doubt that it was him, extort her for this money to get her daughter's body back. So they set up this sting operation. They record Vandersloot saying that he wanted the $250,000, that he wanted $25,000 up front. As part of the agreement, they arrange for John Q. Kelly, which is her attorney, to fly down to Aruba with the money. But to make it seem genuine, he doesn't fly down with $25,000, which was what the agreement was. Flies down with $10,000. And after he gives it to Vandersloot, they meet in a hotel, not the Holiday Inn. I don't actually know what hotel they met in, because it's not anywhere in any of the reports. But I do have feelers out to get the discovery on the current trial, or the current case that's going on now for wire fraud against Vandersloot and extortion. And in that, we'll explain what hotel they stayed at and the nuance of the sting operation. But for now, we just know it was a hotel and it wasn't the Holiday Inn. So
they pretty much set him up to so they could include the wire fraud. They knew they were going to wire some of it anyway.
Absolutely right. And that's exactly what the federal authorities told them. They said, listen, extortion is sexy, but it's not going to get anybody extradited from the Netherlands. We need something, like wire fraud or whatever, where we have federal charges against this guy. So that's what they did. And they
he got away.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it gets so much better. So he gives him the $10,000. Beth wires him the other $15,000 to solidify the federal wire fraud charge. Obviously, Vandersloot gets the money in his bank account. There's no doubt that it's him. It's no doubt it's going into his bank account. So all of that plays off. That's when Vandersloot makes up the lie and brings Kelly to that house there in Aruba and tells Kelly that Natalie's remains were buried in the foundation of that house by his father, who is now dead, that his father did him a solid, basically, and decided to get rid of the body for him by putting it. His father was a construction worker his whole life, so he put it in the foundation of that house so that this way it would never be found. So when
what did he think he was going to get from this? He's either going to get in trouble for wire fraud or he's going to get busted for murder. There was no good path out of this for him. What was he thinking?
I guess his hubris let him believe that they weren't going to be able to corroborate his story unless they tore the house down. And they were never going to do that. So they were just going to accept his word that her body was under this house. And they were going to leave it like that because people own the house at this point and they're living in it. So he couldn't imagine the Aruban police kicking the people out of the house, bulldozing the house, just to find Natalie's body when she's already technically at rest. That had to be what he was thinking. It had to be something like that.
So he didn't factor in the ground penetrating radar and all that
Exactly.
They were going to use. Okay.
Exactly. He didn't realize that the American authorities could, because he knew that Aruba doesn't have that technology, even though, you know, Aruba is like 30 years behind everybody. It's when you leave the resort area of Aruba, you're in a third world country. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. The resort area is beautiful and millions of dollars or whatever, but you go to the other side of the island and you, some of the worst poverty you've ever seen in your life. So he didn't realize that they had ways of checking his story without bulldozing the house. And they did. And as soon as Kelly called him on it, Vandersloot beat feet and went to Peru, where he stayed in Peru for a very short period of time. This all is happening now in March of 2010. So let's fast forward just a little bit. After he's been called out on his BS or whatever, he's now living in Peru. This is where it really starts getting strange. On May the 30th, 2010, exactly 5 years to the day that Natalie Holloway disappeared, Vandersloot killed Stephanie Flores, a 21-year-old college student who was living there in Lima, Peru. And her badly beaten and mutilated body was found in his hotel room. So Vandersloot, once again, knowing that there was no way he was going to get out of it, jumped ship and went across the border into Chile. Chile doesn't play that. So he was in Chile for less than a month before they arrested him and extradited him back to Peru to face the charges of the murder of Stephanie Flores.
They were able to get that from the video footage in the casino, correct? They saw the girl leaving with him.
Yes. And well, not only that, but I mean, there was a DNA smorgasbord in his room. His DNA, her DNA. She didn't go quietly. He beat her. So, I mean, and she was in his room, beaten to a pulp, bleeding all over the place.
Oh my
so
gosh.
There's no denying that. That's about as red-handed as it gets. So they had him dead to rights. Ironically, though, the same month that he's extradited back to Peru and officially charged with the murder of Stephanie Flores, he's also indicted here in the United States in Alabama for the federal wire fraud and extortion charges from the scam that he pulled just a few months earlier in March of 2010 there in Aruba. So he gets formally charged with those federal charges at the same time he gets walloped with murder charges there in Peru. Now, fast forward to January of 2012. So we're about a year and a half later. He hasn't pled guilty or been to trial yet. On January 12th of 2012, Natalie's mother, Beth, finally got an Alabama judge to legally declare Natalie dead. On January 13th, the very next day, this is irony at its best, Vandersloot was sentenced to 28 years in prison for killing Stephanie Flores there in Peru. And as part of his statement, when he confessed so that he wouldn't get life in prison, his statement to the Peruvian officials were, "From the very first moment, I wanted to confess sincerely. I truly am sorry for this act." That was his statement that he read when he accepted his sentence. Now, nothing really happened over the last 11 years, except the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons and the Peruvian government worked out the details to temporarily extradite Vandersloot to Alabama from Peru so that he could stand trial for, not for the death of Natalie Holloway, because he still hasn't been charged with that, but for the extortion and the wire fraud charges that he has here. In the worst case scenario, in the federal system, he faces about 30 years in prison if he were to get convicted on both charges and sentenced to the max. So that's where that is now. Now, in June, just about a month and a half ago, Vandersloot was officially and finally extradited back to the United States. And he's now in Birmingham County Jail waiting for his federal case to come to trial or if he's going to plead out. So that's where the case is now. That could drag on for a certain period of time. What I find very fascinating about the current circumstance, before we get back into all the other issues, is when he first landed in Alabama, his lawyer didn't talk about my client is innocent. He didn't kill Natalie Holloway. The only thing he said, the defense attorney, in his public statement, is that Vandersloot was viciously beaten while he was in prison in Peru. And for all of you listening, if you go and you look on our YouTube channel, you will see the video of the actual cell that Vandersloot was staying in Peruvian prison. And he basically had to go to the bathroom in a concrete hole in the floor. It's not like American jail or American prison, which we've all seen on these reality TV shows now. We've all seen what the inside of American jails and American prisons look like. They at least look like humane places to live for the most part. You know, he had to go to the bathroom in a hole in the floor. It just is what it is. It's not a very pleasant place. My question to everybody, my personal opinion on this, I believe at some point while he's here, to prevent him going back to Peru, because he's only here on a temporary extradition, I don't think he wants to go back to that prison. I believe he's going to confess to the murder of Natalie Holloway in exchange for a plea that's only going to net him maybe 25 years or 30 years. And because that sentence is greater than the amount of time he has left in Peru, that American federal murder charge will trump the Peruvian charges, and he will be able to stay here and serve out the rest of his sentence in American federal prison like Club Fed, rather than going back to that Peruvian hole in the wall. So that's my take on it.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while.
Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it.
I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
Thanks for tuning in. We know you have a choice and appreciate that you've chosen the Veritas 7. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and post a rating for the show before you go. Those metrics are really important for us. And if it's within your means to help us carry on our mission to revitalize these cold cases, please consider becoming one of our sponsors by visiting patreon.com/theveritas7 and signing up for any of our three available tiers of sponsorship. Each one provides a ton of extra content, like message chatting with our hosts in real time while we're recording, or even being able to call in voicemails to the show that we'll play on the air. Thanks again for being such an awesome listener. Now back to the show.
Well, there's also something else here that I recently learned when we were looking into this, is that earlier this year, he got another 18 years for trafficking cocaine in the prison in Peru.
Yes, I did hear about that, too. I didn't. Yeah.
So he may be, that may be why he didn't he forfeit his rights to fight the extradition?
Yes, he swore from day one he was never going to agree to extradite here to the United States. And he waived his right to fight extradition and came here willingly, which is why I really think he's going to try and pull some kind of trick to stay here.
I think you're onto something, because they tacked on another 18. He's like, whoa.
Well, the only thing with the 18, though, I don't know if the 18 is consecutive or concurrent. If it's consecutive, then the 18 doesn't start until they're done with the 28. But if it's concurrent, he's already doing the 18, so it's really not going to get him any more time. And if it does, it's only going to get him another couple of years.
That's very interesting to think about that, right? Because that could fold out for the longer sentence, or he's already serving time for that too. You're right. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I got it. It says an additional 18 years were added to his sentence.
Okay, so then he gets the consecutive. So, yeah, so he's got, yeah, that, so the 18 doesn't start then until the 28 is finished.
So he's, what, 12 in, 13 in? So right. He would have...
And now, I don't know how good time 15. Works in Peru. I doubt he had to do 28 day for day. He might have, because it was a murder charge and it was a brutal murder. So he might have to do the 28 day for day. If that's the case, then he's got another 16 he's got to do before he starts the 18 for a total of 34.
Yeah, so if he pleads to anything less than 34 here, he essentially wins.
Well, the only thing, though, is if he pleads to anything less than 34 here, he's probably going to have to go back. Because that sentence supersedes the one he has here. The sentence that he has here, usually, now there are exceptions to this, but usually in extradition law, when it's international extradition, the country that has the superior claim for incarceration is the one that gets the body. So if he owes 34 years in Peru, he's going to have to get 35 here in order for this case to supersede. So that usually that's the way it works. Like I said, he knows that the authorities over here are chomping at the bit for him to plead guilty to Natalie's murder. And Beth wants it and everybody wants it. So if he throws in the cake and the cherry that, yes, I will actually tell you where her body is and you will actually be able to recover her remains on the condition that I get 35, the federal authorities are probably going to go for it. 35 is most of the rest of his life. You know what I mean? He would be like 80 when he got out, if he got out.
He's 36 now.
Okay, so he would be 71.
Yeah, Beth is pretty hardcore, man. She's not letting up on this.
Right.
And I don't think she's going to take anything unless she gets the location of Beth's body.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. She's going to want the location of Natalie's body. That's going to be part of any deal he works out. You can bet that. They're not, no ifs, ands, or buts. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. If he wants a deal and he wants to stay here and do the rest of his life, or the rest of his time here in the United States in a clean prison, you better believe they're going to give him, you know, exactly what they want. As an extra special gift, as an extra special treat for our audience tonight, we have with us an amazingly talented medium who, it's just absolutely incredible the feelings that she gets from these cases. And of course, we don't know if she's going to get a feeling about this case, about Natalie Holloway or about Vandersloot or any of the circumstances, but she's agreed to come on the show tonight. So we can ask her a couple of questions. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to Paula Morgan. Paula, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great tonight. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for being with us. We greatly appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
I'll jump right in and get right to it. Have you gotten any kind of, either now or in the 20 or so years that this has been, 18 years that this has been dragging on, have you gotten any feelings about this case? Do you have any premonitions or hunches?
Unfortunately, on this one, no, I have not. And boy, have I tried, because I would like to see justice for Natalie.
Just on the case, it may be discussing some of the details or whatever might get you a little, you know, get you tuned in on the right channel, or I don't know how that works. So please forgive me if the terminology that I use seems a little crude or inaccurate. But on a regular level, as far as not on a premonition level, just as a person, what do you think about this case? You believe that this guy is hands down got to be the one that did it?
On this one, I feel he had help. I don't think he was the only one involved. Really? I feel he got some help. Yeah, I do.
Well, that's intriguing, because I mean, he was there with the two Pakistani guys. It would be, I
I'm
guess
not
it would
getting
be kind
the
of
feeling
hard
with them, though. I'm not getting that feeling with the two guys. I'm feeling like it's some other guy that's involved.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah,
that's
going to
be really
father.
Interesting when we get the case stuff to see if there are any other suspects that are mentioned in the reports.
Yeah, it could be the father too, Paula.
Like a cover up or something, helping cover his son's trail. You know, they were a pretty famous family or name, and this would be to save the reputation, maybe some kind of a cover-up.
But I don't get the feeling that if and when he does come to get sentenced in the United States, I don't think he's going to be around very long in there. I think he's going to have a hit on him. That's my feeling.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the federal prison system is really different. It's changed a lot, too, in the last 10 years. From what I understand from covering a lot of child predator and sex offense cases, they basically have their own prisons now after the things that happened to, like, Jeffrey Dahmer and people like that, to eliminate the chance of vengeful guards taking bribes from family members or gangs or whatever the case may be and unlocking the wrong door at the wrong time and letting somebody get prison justice dispensed to them. A lot of times now they're taking these people and they're putting them in special prisons where everybody there is high profile and everybody there is for a crime that's heinous and back in the day would be really frowned upon socially. So that doesn't mean it doesn't happen, because, you know, those obviously killings still happen even in those prisons. So it's definitely in the realm of possibility. You know, he's going to have a bullseye on his back if he were to stay here. But it seems kind of odd that he has a bullseye in his back there in Peru, obviously for killing Miss Flores. I think her family had some connections too. You know, it seems like he's not very popular over there for his crimes either.
Did they say who beat him in Peru? I did not hear that.
His attorney here did not say who was responsible for the beating, only that he was savagely beaten in Peru in prison multiple times is what his attorney said. And it just struck me as funny. That would be the statement. Your client just got extradited from another continent. You're sitting there and you're making a statement as he's setting foot on American soil for the first time in 15 years. And your statement is that he got beaten badly while he was in Peru. Knowing full well, because you're an American attorney, it's not like he has a foreign attorney, knowing full well that most of the people in America that are reading that are going to pump their fist and be like, all right, you know? So it seems to me that there has to be some kind of motivation behind why his lawyer would make that statement, especially when he did. And the only thing I can think of is that he's starting some kind of long con game to get himself to stay here. I could be wrong, could be totally off. It just seems to me to make the most sense based on the fact that we know that that's what his lawyer said when he touched down. And, you know, there's no self-serving purpose to say that. If you're the lawyer for the defense and you're here on trial for extortion and wire fraud, which are basically nonviolent white collar crimes, and you have brutal murder on the docket waiting for you back there in Peru that you've already been sentenced to all this ridiculous amount of time. So just Paula, what about, have you gotten any other influence or notions from any of the people there that might have been involved, like those Pakistani guys, anything about the case at all, even the people that are in the periphery?
No, I just, call it a feeling. I just don't believe that those two other men are involved. They might have been one of that situation where they're at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay, that's fair enough. All three of them were arrested twice. All three of them were released twice with no charges being filed. So when we get the actual police documents from these cases, which is going to take probably longer because of the fact that we're dealing with Aruban authorities as well as American authorities, the FBI, and so on and so forth. Pretty much the only documents we're going to be able to count on are the FBI reports as far as the FOIA requests are concerned. So it's going to be interesting to see what the FBI has to say in their reports on what they believe to be the level of culpability of the two Pakistani guys. It's odd, though, that both times that they arrested Vandersloot, they felt that there was enough evidence to arrest those other guys too. Even though they never felt there was enough evidence to charge them, they did feel like there was enough evidence to arrest them. So that could just be the proximity because it was their car that she was getting into the last time she was seen alive. I don't know. Another interesting little morsel and tidbit about this case is that Carlos and Charlie's, which is the club that Natalie and Vandersloot and all of them were hanging out in that night, closed not that long after this happened, and it became a restaurant, another chain restaurant. Carlos and Charlie's is a notorious chain restaurant, bar and grill type place in the Netherlands and in about a half a dozen other European countries. The same parent company, though, that owns Carlos and Charlie's also owns another chain of restaurants called Senor Frog. Well, the Carlos and Charlie's that was in Aruba is now Senor Frog. So, you know, I read that and I did a little bit of research on Carlos and Charlie's and I found out that they're both owned by the same company. I'm assuming that Carlos and Charlie's was getting some bad press, even though there's no evidence that Natalie was abducted from Carlos and Charlie's. It looked, by all outward appearances, it looked like she got in their car willingly with the Pakistani's guy car, but whatever it is, Carlos and Charlie's must have been getting some bad press out of it, being photographed and put in the news and all of that. Enough, at least, to make the parent company want to change the name.
Yeah, well, speaking of Carlos and Charlie's, you know, going back to the night that she was missing, I'm trying to remember exactly, I'm sorry, what her friend, I think her friend's name was Lorraine.
That sounds familiar. I don't remember specifically in the report.
Yeah, I think her name was Lorraine, one of her friends. Said that she remembers seeing Joran and Natalie at the casino hotel prior to going to Carlos and Charlie's. But then what I find interesting about that is that one of the hotel staff people said that he was known to go into the casino going after young female tourists.
Yeah, I think that staff member is the one that actually gave Johan's name to the police at the very beginning.
Right. Yeah, I just find that really interesting that he's known to do that, and then that where he first met her.
I found in most of these, very rarely do any of these, you know, it's cliche, but very rarely do any of these leopards change their spots.
This guy had probably been targeting high school girls on these trips for a while. You know, he had his little honeypot.
He was a high school boy at the time, too. He was actually younger than Natalie. At the time of the abduction, Natalie was 18 and he was 17. So he was actually younger than her by at least several months.
Do we have any idea if there's any other cases that of missing girls in those age groups, kind of in some of where he's been in his travels? I'm curious to see that these can't be the only two girls with how savage he is. I just think this is the only two girls that have, you know, gone missing or been noticed or been caught. But there's got to be a trail of this behavior and other girls maybe missing that haven't been accounted for. It's just something that just kind of came to me right now with all of this.
I was thinking the exact same thing when you just said that. Like, are there any cases, like unsolved cases, where other girls were injured or murdered or missing?
And that's going to be the thing. It's going to be very difficult for us to investigate that, because this is one of the reasons why we focus on American cases or cases that are rooted in America, because unfortunately there's no FOIA process to get that information from like the Netherlands or any of the other countries. It's very possible while he was in college during a couple of years after Natalie disappeared, and before he came to do that ABC interview in New York, where he killed people in the Netherlands. Unfortunately, we're probably never going to know, because I'm the first one to admit I don't have the beginning, faintest idea how to petition the Netherlands, you know, Dutch authorities, if there were any unsolved murders in that time and around that area where he was going to school. And I would hope Interpol would have investigated that.
You would think so. He has, for so long, snowed so many people. And for the longest time, there was people who thought, well, maybe it wasn't him or whatever. But he really sealed his coffin on this by this other young lady taking her life, because now it shows that he had the potential to actually do what he did to Natalie. Whereas for the longest time, he was able to brush this off. But now we have proof he's killed another girl, too. So now the behavior's been established.
Everybody knows who he is now. Everybody knows it's not, you know, a child prank, or what, you know, it wasn't just an innocent thing where he accidentally killed her or slipped her a roofie and whatever.
She fell and hit her head.
Everybody knows after what he did to the Flores girl, more than likely he killed Natalie, and more than likely it wasn't an accident. It wasn't a peaceful kind of death.
Well, the description that you said of what he did to this other young lady and how savage the beating was, I mean, that's somebody with incredible rage and the capability to do what he did to her, you know, that right there alone takes away the accident prone to the case with Natalie. Absolutely.
So when he was arrested in Chile, did you read what he told the Chilean authorities as to why he murdered the girl in Peru?
No, that I didn't see in the report.
She got into his laptop and apparently found some evidence that linked him to the Holloway case, and she questioned him about it. And that's why he did what he did to her.
Wow. Yeah, no, I didn't see that in any of the reports, so that's going to be interesting to corroborate.
He apparently, when he fled to Chile and Peru called Chile and said, hey, we need this guy back, he admitted to the Chilean authorities that's why he did what he did.
So do you think that young lady then, when she met with him at the gambling table in the casino, that she knew who he was? Because from the video footage, you don't really know. You'd think that they just met and she had no idea who he was and they go back to the room. But now that changes the whole scenario of, like, did she know? If she's going into his computer, did she know who he was from his face? Now I'm curious.
It's interesting. If she was an in-touch kind of girl, you would think she'd have to, because it was definitely global news when Natalie disappeared. And his face was all over everything. I would imagine that she wasn't insulated from that living in the Peruvian capital. It wasn't like she was living in some podunk town. Lima's the capital. She was also an affluent girl. Her parents had money too, or whatever. This guy didn't target paupers. He wasn't like going out looking for call girls or anything like that. He was targeting women of means.
Which is crazy, because when I watched that video footage, I thought to myself, like, oh my gosh, as they're walking off, don't you know who he is? But then I thought she couldn't have, or she wouldn't have left with them and gone up to the room. Like, so that was my first immediate thought of, don't you recognize this face? And then as they walked off together, I thought, well, she must not. Because who would do that? But, you know, there's women who write men in jail and obsessed with guys who are serial killers and want to marry them and never met them. Like, it's the obsessions with that stuff is odd to me.
Oh, it really is. Jodi Arias. Jodi Arias has been married and divorced 4 times while she's been in prison to 3 different guys. Well, 4 different guys now that she never met. And she's never getting out. But the guys are just in love with her.
Well, didn't Bundy father a child when he was on death row in Florida?
I don't believe that's factually accurate, because Florida's death row doesn't. I've been to Rayford on numerous occasions and they don't have conjugal visits there for death row. Now, they do have conjugal visits for people that have finite prison sentences, but they do not have conjugal visits for people that are on death row. So I don't believe he's possible from the father or child while he was there. I vaguely heard that too somewhere, but I believe that was debunked. We could definitely look into it. I know at some point in the show, we're going to end up doing a show on Bundy. So when we do, we'll make sure we have all of those facts and bring them up.
And do we know any more about this person He identified himself as Marcus, who sent Dave a message claiming that he knew the, I don't remember, something about the drug runners.
I don't know anything more about him other than that incident. And okay. Right now I'm looking at a report that I hadn't seen before. They actually had a promising lead at one point. The Royal Netherlands Air Force deployed a fleet of F-16s to go over a certain part of the island by the lighthouse and look with radar or shifts in the ground. What they did is they took photos of the island and then compared them to photos of the island from like 2 or 3 years earlier to see if there were any shifts in elevation or whatever. And they looked like they had gotten some hits. So they actually dug a couple of times thinking that they might have found a body, but they didn't.
I feel that she's not buried. I have a feeling she was dumped in the ocean.
They did some pretty serious searches around there.
Well, there was those skeletal remains that these divers had found, but then I don't know if there was a DNA match. That was weird. That was just... Wasn't that odd? I mean, there's this full skeletal photo and these accounts of these divers that were like just diving in the area. They see the skeleton in the sand. You can pull up the photos and see the shape of the skeleton. Why did we not hear what those remains were? It's obviously a human in the same region and area. And then it was just dropped.
Yeah, things happen. And obviously, this wasn't that long ago. So DNA technology is what it is. I'm sure they ruled out that that wasn't Natalie by DNA.
Yeah, they said they didn't find anything having to do with Natalie.
Yeah, I guess if the person didn't have a profile to hit, they just basically have an unknown skeletal remains. So that's probably why you didn't hear an identity, because they haven't been able to identify it. The only thing they could definitively do is rule out Natalie as the body.
Paula, are you getting that feeling that she was dumped into the ocean?
Yes, 100%. I feel like she was choked, and that's how she died. That's the feeling I'm getting, that she was choked. She died due to strangulation, and her body was dumped into the water. Do we know if, and I'm going to assume that the father had a boat?
I've not seen any evidence of it yet. And also in any of the articles that I've seen, I haven't come across anybody mentioning a boat. It'll be interesting to see if in the actual police reports, when we get them, before we got ready to do the actual Full Tilt podcast on this subject, if there is any mention of a boat, if his father had a boat. I would imagine that they did. It's kind of hard to live on an island and be of means and not have a boat.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm getting the assumption from.
Right. Well, except because of the fact that the idea of a boat hasn't made it in the news, I'm assuming, and again, it's just an assumption, but I'm assuming that somehow or another they ruled out that the boat was never taken out. From the time she disappeared to the time they, you know, originally questioned him, and they could prove that the boat never left the dock. Now, that doesn't mean he didn't take somebody else's boat from another dock, another pier, another marina, or whatever the case may be. But because they never mentioned the boat, I'm assuming it's got to be because even though they don't have an alibi for him, they probably have an alibi for the boat.
Okay.
Or they went for a walk down the beach, or there was some kind of cliffside, or there was like, I think he kept saying that they were on the beach, they walked the beach, and then she had like some seizure when they were kissing or something like that. So I'm wondering if he brought her down to the water. Does that sound familiar to any of you guys?
I read where he admitted to making out with her. I read where he said that he had sex with her and that she was willing. And I even remember him trying to defame her and talking about they all had sex with her. And that's, you can't really put much weight in anything he says. So, you know, nobody really knows. Clearly, she wasn't an angelic type of girl. She did like to party. She did like to have fun. She did like to, you know, raise a little hell. But that being said, that doesn't mean she was open and willing to getting abused and tortured and beaten or whatever the case may be. However, my take is this guy strikes the psychologist in me. It tells me that this guy's psychopathology, everything that he says is a potential ruse to set himself up to have another excuse. So by saying that they all had sex with her, to me, that tells me he's trying to lay the groundwork to say she wanted to get choked, and as a result of rough sex, she died.
That's the image I'm getting. That has something to do with when they were having sex.
So do you think it was just your hand and her, or were those two brothers there as well?
No, I just think it was Natalie and him. And it was just taken a little too far, obviously.
And then I think he had
freaked
help.
Out.
Well, I remember he said that she was shaking, and then he prodded her and she didn't move. And he claimed that a friend had taken her out on a boat and disposed of her body.
That's where you're getting the boat, Paula.
Maybe. Where did you hear that from before?
He said he went out to sea and then he threw out like an old rag. I'm just reading that right now, but
Yeah, but like Kurt said, you got to take what he's admitted to with a grain of salt because.
Right.
But I think April's saying the friend said that they went out on a boat.
Yes.
Or did he say? The friend said they went on a boat and disposed of her body.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that where he didn't act alone feeling that I have.
Yeah, and the boat. This is weird.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're talking about the two brothers?
It said a friend, but then there also was a witness that said they saw a young man wet from the waist down, wearing only a shoe, running from the pond, though. That's really weird. I'm sorry. I'm just reading this because I wanted to find out more about that.
So maybe it's not like a sailboat or like a motorized boat in the ocean, but maybe more like a fishing boat or something.
I mean, if it went out to sea.
Out to sea.
Yeah.
This is interesting. This is stuff I haven't heard.
Yeah, that is.
I just read it. Yeah, I'd never heard it. I just looked it up as y'all were talking about it.
Okay, that's really weird. Because Paula, these are along the lines you were just saying this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And now I wonder, the curiosity in me. Obviously, this guy's damaged goods. But I'm curious if he was basically a good guy up to that point. And I wonder if this kind of incident set him off. And maybe he realized when he went to Peru, he was already eventually going to hang for Natalie anyway. So now, basically, Natalie's death made him into a monster?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes to that one. Yeah, because if he's trying to cover up, and this other girl comes along, and as one of you had mentioned, that she found some incriminating evidence against him on his computer, I can see this man being enraged at something like that. But I don't think, I'm not getting the feeling that he was enraged when she died. I honestly think it was during an act of intercourse and he choked her and it just went too far.
And then I wonder really now if just set him on a path of destruction.
Right, because they did say he was a good student and wanted to go to college. And then after this all happened, he started drinking, he started doing drugs, he started gambling. He went down like a pretty dark path.
So we might actually be able to psychologically chart the implosion of a person's psyche.
I literally feel like that's what's happening right now here with all of this. It's kind of crazy how this is all unraveling.
I mean, if that's the case, this is a psychological thesis that would get somebody a doctorate in about 2 months. It's really wild that, to watch the escalation of emotion at the same time you're watching the de-escalation or devolving of the higher functioning brain. So, here you got a guy that now the only thing he has going for him is his ability to lie. That's it. He's trying to do everything he can do. It's basically me against the world. And I got to do everything I can do to make sure I don't go to prison for the rest of my life for killing that girl who really died as an accident while we were having sex.
Because it takes so many lies to cover up one lie. What is it? 7 lies to cover one lie, and then it just snowballs from there. But it's interesting, April, to hear some of those.
Especially if you don't choose good lies.
Right.
Like he's, the funny thing is, he lies a lot, and he lies unexhausted, indefatigable lies. Mm-hmm. But none of them are really that good. It only takes a couple of seconds to debunk any lie he says.
Well, if this ends up going to trial in Alabama, the prosecuting attorney may very well lay this out for us if he's got to do it in front of a jury.
Now, that's right. Yes and no. This is where the law of evidence and my legal background comes in, because the prosecuting attorney, no matter how tempted he is to do that there in the federal courthouse in front of a federal judge, there are laws that will not allow him to introduce too much evidence of Holloway's disappearance. The reason being, he hasn't been charged with the crime and he has the right in America to not incriminate himself.
But so if you ignore the Natalie part of his downward spiral here, the prosecuting attorney, let's say he started beating puppies when he was 12. We don't know that, right?
Right.
But the prosecutor, as this evolved, he may lay out some sort of timeline for us in the trial.
Very possible. This is why I don't believe that Vandersloot has already confessed to Holloway's death. I believe he's going to wait until after he's sentenced on these charges, when it can't be used against him anymore. And I think that's when he's going to do it.
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
Once this case is over, But before he gets extradited back, I believe that's when he's going to confess to killing Natalie. Because as long as he doesn't confess to killing Natalie, or at least being there and being involved in her death, they can't bring it up at the trial against him. Because again, that violates his right against self-incrimination. They can't force him to defend himself because he's not charged with killing Natalie right now. So if they introduce it, it immediately taints the jury. So it would be a mistrial immediately, as long as the judge operates by the letter of the law. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. But again, I have a deep gut feeling that he's going to confess to Natalie's murder before he goes back to Peru. That's just my gut. But again, if he confessed now, they could use that against him in the current trials that he's got going on. And the two of them together running consecutive, like his Peruvian ones are, would mean he would get life without. So there would be no chance then of him getting out of prison. His only card is the whereabouts of her remains as leverage. Now, if it's true and he dumped her body out at sea somewhere, obviously he doesn't have that real leverage. If her body hasn't washed up somewhere by now, it's never gonna. So if he did do that, while that might have helped keep him out of jail this long, ultimately in the end, it might be the thing, because it's the one bargaining chip he has. It's the only bargaining chip he has. And at this point, he's lied so many times. Even if it is the truth, if he tells everybody, well, we dumped her out at sea, they're going to be like, well, we're going to hammer you to the wall because we think you're lying. The whole boy that cried wolf scenario. So, yes, very, very interesting how this case is going to play out. We're definitely going to have a lot more information and a lot more material in a month or so when we receive whatever it is through our FOIA requests that we're going to get from the FBI. And I'm going to try to get some information from the Aruban authorities. We'll see where that goes. I'm not holding my breath for that. But it's going to be interesting. If I manage to get the time, I would also, or if somebody on my panel, on our panel here gets the time, I would love to try and reach out to the Dutch authorities just for the heck of it and see if they have a database. And if they could tell us while he was there in the Netherlands attending college, if there are any unsolved murders of girls, you know, teenage girls or girls in their early 20s. Be really interesting to see that.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while. Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it.
I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember, TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
Thanks for tuning in. We know you have a choice and appreciate that you've chosen the Veritas 7. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and post a rating for the show before you go. Those metrics are really important for us. And if it's within your means to help us carry on our mission to revitalize these cold cases, please consider becoming one of our sponsors by visiting patreon.com/theveritas7 and signing up for any of our three available tiers of sponsorship. Each one provides a ton of extra content, like message chatting with our hosts in real time while we're recording, or even being able to call in voicemails to the show that we'll play on the air. Thanks again for being such an awesome listener. Now back to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this teaser episode of the Veritas 7's presentation. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, this is just a teaser. You definitely want to look for our Gifted Insights episode pertaining to this case, as well as our Uncensored episode pertaining to this case. Again, Gifted Insights episodes are all
featuring our amazing resident psychic, Gina Nisanoff, and her take on what she thinks about each one of the cases that we go through. So you definitely don't want to miss a single episode of Gifted Insights with Gina and I. And you'd certainly want to keep on the lookout for the Prime episodes when it comes to this and all of our other cases. That's the meat of our entire investigation. Six chapters ranging from victimology to the verdict. We go over every step of the case and break it down for you and present it in a way that hopefully at the end can lead to our nomination for an indictment against a specific suspect or suspects. So again, nobody does it quite the way we do. We hope you enjoy the way we present it to you. We also want to encourage everybody to go and join our Facebook discussion group so that you can get in the conversation and weigh in on the verdict. We are all about interactivity here. It is facebook.com/groups/TheVeritas7. Go and join, then link in to one of the chat rooms that we have there and get involved with not only our staff, but also with other listeners like yourself who are fascinated by these cases and want to talk about them as we present. Quick reminder, if you like the content and you enjoy the show, please, please remember to rate the show, like it, and subscribe to it. Those metrics, you know, they only take a couple of seconds on your part, but they really mean a lot to us as far as our metrics and our advertisers and our sponsors and things like that. So please, if you like the show, remember to take a minute or two and go and rate, like, and subscribe to the show. It really means a lot to us. For all of us here at the Veritas 7, thank you for tuning in. We really appreciate you. This show is all about you. Have a great night. God bless. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. So turn the car around and leave. Meet me underneath the tree inside the valley that we made. And with our hands we'll make the best of the life that we have left. And we will never say goodbye. Our hands will make the best of the life that we have left, and we will never say goodbye. And if we do, we'll meet again, knowing love was heaven sent, and I've never felt this way.